Richter said he thought that the sound came first. One great big complicated chord. The biggest, most complicated sound there ever was. A sound so complex that you couldn't play it within a universe any more than you can open a box with the crowbar that's inside it. One great chord, which, as it were, played everything into being, started the music, if you like.
A sort of ta-da, said Ridcully.
I suppose so.
I thought the universe came into being because some god cut off some other god's wedding tackle and made the universe out of it, said Ridcully. Always seemed straightforward to me. I mean, it's the kind of thing you can imagine happening.
Well,
now you're telling me someone blew a big hooter and here we are?
I don't know about someone, said Ponder.
Noises don't just make themselves, that I do know, said Ridcully. He relaxed a bit, certain in his own mind that reason had prevailed, and patted Ponder on the back.
It needs some work, lad, he said. Old Richter was a bit unsound, you know. He thought everything came down to numbers.
Mind you, said Ponder, the universe does have a rhythm. Day and night, light and dark, life and death.
Chicken soup and croutons, said Ridcully.
Well, not every metaphor bears close examination.
There was a knock on the door. Tez the Terrible entered, carrying a tray. He was followed by Mrs. Whitlow, the housekeeper. Ridcully's jaw dropped. Mrs. Whitlow curtsied.
Good morning, Your Grace, she said.
Her ponytail bobbed. There was a rustle of starched petticoats. Ridcully's jaw rose again, but only so that he could say,
What have you done to your...
Excuse me, Mrs. Whitlow, said Ponder quickly, but have you served breakfast to any of the faculty this morning?
That's right, Mr. Stibbons, said Mrs. Whitlow.
Her ample and mysterious bosom shifted under its sweater.
None of the gentlemen came down, so I got trays taken up to them all.
Daddy-o?
Ridcully's gaze continued downwards. He'd never thought of Mrs. Whitlow as having legs before. Of course, in theory, the woman needed something to move around on, but, well... But there were two pudgy knees protruding from the huge mushroom of skirts. Further down, there were white socks.
Your... hair,
he began hoarsely.
Is there something wrong?
Said Mrs. Whitlow.
Nothing, nothing, said Ponder. Thank you very much.
The door closed behind her.
She was snapping her fingers as she went out, just like you said,
said Ponder.
Wasn't the only thing that snapped,
said Ridcully, still shuddering.
Did you look at her shoes?
I think my eyes shut themselves protectively about there.
If it's really alive, said Ponder, then it's very contagious.
This scene took place in Crash's father's coach house, but it was an echo of a scene evolving all around the city. Crash hadn't been christened Crash. He was the son of a rich dealer in hay and feedstuffs, but he despised his father for being dead from the neck up, totally concerned with material things, unimaginative, and also for paying him a ridiculous $3 a week allowance. Crash's father had left his horses in the coach house. At the moment, they were both trying to squeeze into one corner, having tried fruitlessly to kick a hole in the walls.
"I reckon I nearly had it that time,"
said Crash, as hay dust poured down from the roof and Woodworm hurried off to find a better home.
"It ain't just... I mean, it ain't like the sound we heard in the drum," said Jimbo critically. "It's a bit like it, but it isn't... It ain't it."
Jimbo was Crash's best friend, and wished he was one of the people.
"It's good enough to start with," said Crash. "So you and Noddy, you two get guitars, and Scum, you could play the drums."
"Dunno how,"
said Scum. It was actually his name.
"No one knows how to play the drums," said Crash patiently. "There's nothing to know. You just hit them with the sticks."
"Yeah, but what if I sort of miss?"
"Sit closer."
"Right," said Crash, sitting back.
"Now, the important thing is, the really important thing is, what are we going to call ourselves?"
Cliff looked around.
"Well, I reckon we looked at every house and I'm damned if I see the name Dibbler anywhere,"
he growled. Buddy nodded. Most of Sator Square was the frontage of the university, but there was room for a few other buildings. They were the sort that have a dozen brass plates by the door, the sort that hinted that even wiping your feet on the doormat was going to cost you dear.
"Hello, boys."
They turned. Dibbler beamed at them over a tray of possible sausages and buns. There were a couple of sacks beside him.
"Sorry we're late," said Glod, "but we couldn't find your office anywhere."
Dibbler spread his arms wide.
"This is my office," he said, equally expansively. "Sator Square. Thousands of square feet of space. Excellent communications. Passing trade. Try these on,"
he added, picking up one of the sacks and opening it.
"I had to guess at sizes."
They were black and made of cheap cotton. One of them was extra, 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 extra large.
"A vest with words on," said Buddy.
"The band with rocks in," Cliff read slowly. "Here, that's us, isn't it?"
"What do we want these for?" said Glod. "We know who we are."
"Advertising," said Dibbler. "Trust me."
He put a brown cylinder in his mouth and lit the end.
"Wear them tonight. Have I got a gig for you?"
"Have you?"
"That's what I said."
"No, you asked us," said Glod. "How should we know?"
"Has it got that livery on the side?" said Cliff.
Dibbler started again.
"It's a big place. You'll get a great audience, and you'll get..."
He looked at their trusting open faces.
$10 over guild rate. How about that?"
Glod's face split into a big grin.
"What, each?" he said.
Dibbler gave them another appraising look.
No, he said. "Fair dues, $10 between you. I mean, be serious. You need exposure."
"There's that word again," said Cliff. "The Musicians Guild will be right on her necks."
"Not this place," said Dibbler. "Guaranteed."
"Where is it then?" said Glod.
"Are you ready for this?"
They blinked at him. Dibbler beamed and blew a cloud of greasy smoke.
"The cavern."
The beat went on. Of course, there are bound to be a few mutations. Gortlick and Hammerjug were songwriters and fully paid-up members of the guild. They wrote dwarf songs for all occasions. Some people say this is not hard to do so long as you can remember how to spell gold. But this is a little bit cynical. Many dwarf songs, or right, all dwarf songs except the one about hi-ho, are on the lines of gold, gold, gold. But it's all in the inflection. Dwarfs have thousands of words for gold, but will use any of them in an emergency, such as when they see some gold that doesn't belong to them. They had a small office in Tin Lid Alley, where they sat either side of an anvil and wrote popular songs to mine along to.
"Gort?" "What?"
"What do you think of this one?" Hammerjug cleared his throat.
"I'm mean and turf, and a mean and turf, and a mean and turf, and a mean and turf, and me and my friends can't walk towards you with our hats on backwards in a menacing way, yo."
Gortlick chewed the end of his composing hammer thoughtfully.
"Good rhythm," he said, "but the words need some work."
"You mean more gold, gold, gold?"
"Yes." "What are you thinking of calling it?"
Rat music."
"Why rat music?"
Hammerjug looked puzzled.
"Couldn't really say," he said. "It was just an idea I had in my brain."
Gortlick shook his head. Dwarfs were a burrowing race. He knew what they liked.
"Good music's got to have hole in it," he said. "You ain't got nothing if you ain't got hole."
"Now, now, calm down, calm down," said Dibbler. "It's the biggest venue in Ankh-Morpork, that's why. I don't see what the problem is."
"The cavern," screamed Glod.
"Chryso Price the Troll runs it, that's the problem."
"They say he's a godfather in the break here," said Cliff.
"Now, now, now, that's never been proved."
"Only 'cause it's very hard to prove things when someone scooped a hole in your head and buried your feet in it."
"There's no need for this prejudice. Just 'cause he's a troll," said Dibbler.
"I'm a troll, so I can be prejudiced against trolls, all right. He's one mean motherlord. They say when they found the big Breece gang, none of them had any teeth."
"What is the cavern?" said Buddy.
"Troll place," said Cliff. "They say..."
"It'll be great. Why worry?" said Dibbler.
"It's a gambling joint, too."
Troll gambling is even simpler than Australian gambling. One of the most popular games is One Up, which consists of throwing a coin in the air and betting on whether it will come down again.
"But the guild won't go in there," said Dibbler. "Not if they know what's good for them."
"'And I know what's good for me, too,' shouted Clod. "'I'm good at knowing that. "'It's good for me not to go into a troll dive.'
"'They threw axes at you in the drum,' said Dibbler, reasonably.
"'Yes, but only in fun. "'It's not as if they were aiming.'
"'Anyway,' said Cliff, "'only trolls and damn silly young humans go there "'who think it clever to drink in troll bar. "'You won't get an audience.'
Dibbler tapped the side of his nose.
"'You play,' he said. "'You'll get an audience.' That's my job.
The doors aren't big enough for me to go in, snapped Clod.
They're huge doors, said Dibbler.
They ain't big enough for me, because if you try to get me in there, you'll have to drag the straight in too on account of me holding on to it.
No, be sensible.
No, screamed Clod, and I'm screaming for all three of us.
The guitar whined. Buddy swung it around until he could hold it and played a couple of chords. That seemed to calm it down.
"'I think it, likes the idea,' he said.
"'It likes the idea,' said Glod, simmering down a little bit.
"'Oh, good. Well, do you know what they do to dwarfs who go into the cavern?'
"'We do need the money, and it's probably not worse than what the Guild'd do for us if we play anywhere else,' said Buddy. "'And we've got to play.'
They stood looking at one another.
"'What you boys should do now,' said Dibbler, blowing out a smoke ring, "'is find somewhere nice and quiet to spend the day. Have a bit of a rest.'
"'Damn right,' said Cliff. "'I never expected to carry these rocks around the whole team.'
Dibbler raised a finger.
"'Ah,' he said, "'I thought of that too. You don't want to waste your talents lugging stuff around. That's what I told myself. I hired you a helper.' Very cheap, only a dollar a day. I'll take it straight out your wages so you don't have to bother about it. Meet Ashfelt.
Who?
Said Buddy.
It's me,
said one of the sacks beside Dibbler. The sack opened up a bit and turned out to be not a sack at all, but a sort of crumpled kind of mobile heap of... Buddy felt his eyes watering. It looked like a troll, except that it was shorter than a dwarf. It wasn't smaller than a dwarf. What Ashfelt lacked in height, he made up in breadth, and while on the subject, also in smell.
"'How come?' said Cliff. "'He's so short.'
"'An elephant sat on me,' said Ashfelt sulkily.
Glod blew his nose.
"'Only sat?'
Ashfelt was already wearing a Band with Rocks In T-shirt. It was tight across the chest, but reached down to the floor.
"'Ashfelt will look after you.' said Dibbler. There isn't anything he doesn't know about show business.
Ashfelt gave them a big grin.
You'll be okay with me, he said. I've worked with them all, I have. Been everywhere, done it all.
We could go to the front, said Cliff. No one around there when the university's on holiday.
Good. Got things to organise, said Dibbler. See you tonight, the cavern, 7 o'clock.
He strode off.
You know the funny thing about him, said Glod.
What?
The way he was smoking that sausage. Do you think he knew?
Ashfelt grabbed Cliff's bag and slung it easily over his shoulder.
Let's go, boss, he said.
An elephant sat on you,
said Buddy as they crossed the square.
Yep, at the circus, said Ashfelt. I used to muck him out.
That's how you got like that?
No. Didn't get like this till elephants had sat on me 3 or 4 times, said the small flat troll. Dunno why. I'd be cleaning up after them next minute. It'd all be dark.
I'd have quit after the first time, me, said Glod.
Nah, said Ashfelt with a contented smile. Couldn't do that. Show business is in me soul.
Ponder looked down at the thing they had hammered together.
I don't understand it either. He said, but it looks as though we can trap it in a string, and it makes the string play the music again. It's like an iconograph for sound.
They'd put the wire inside the box, which resonated beautifully. It played the same dozen bars over and over again.
A box of music, said Ridcully. My word.
What I'd like to try, said Ponder, is getting the musicians to play in front of a lot of strings like this. Perhaps we could trap the music.
"'What for?' said Ridcully. "'What on disc for?'
"'Well, if you could get music in boxes, you wouldn't need musicians any more.'
Ridcully hesitated. There was a lot to be said for the idea. A world without musicians had a certain appeal. They were a scruffy bunch, in his experience, quite unhygienic. He shook his head reluctantly. "Not this sort of music," he said. "We want to stop it, not make more of it."
"What exactly is wrong with it?"
said Ponder. It's well, can't you see," said Redcully, "it makes people act funny, wear funny clothes, be rude, not do what they're told. I can't do a thing with them. It's not right. Besides, remember Mr. Hong?"
"It's certainly very unusual," said Ponder. "Can we get some more for study purposes, Arch-Chancellor?"
Redcully shrugged. "We follow the Dean," he said.
"Good grief,"
breathed Buddy in the huge echoing emptiness. "No wonder they call it the Cavern. It's huge."
"I feel dwarfed," said Glod.
Ashfelt ambled to the front of the stage.
One, two, he said. One, two.
Three,
said Buddy helpfully. Ashfelt stopped and looked embarrassed.
Just trying out the, he muttered. Just trying it.
"We'll never fill this," said Buddy.
Glod poked in a box by the side of the stage. He said,
"They might. Look at these."
He unrolled a poster. The others clustered around.
"That's a picture of us," said Cliff. "Someone's painted a picture of us."
"Looking mean," said Glod.
"It's a good one of Buddy," said Ashfelt, waving his guitar like that.
"Why is there all that lightning and stuff?"
said Buddy.
"I'd never look that mean, even when I'm mean," said Glod.
"The new sound that's going around,"
Cliff read, his forehead wrinkling with the effort.
"The bandy with Rockies," said Glod.
"Oh, no, it says we're going to be here and everything," moaned Glod. "We're dead."
"Be there or be a rectangular thing," said Cliff.
"I don't understand that."
"There's dozens of these rolls in here," said Glod. "They're posters. You know what that means. He's been having them stuck up in places. Talking of which, when the Musicians' Guild get hold of us..."
"Music's free," said Buddy. "It has to be free."
"What?" said Glod. "Not in this dwarf's town."
"Then it should be," said Buddy. "People shouldn't have to pay to play music."
"Right. That boy is right. That's just what I've always said. Isn't that what I've always said? That's what I've said right enough."
Dibbler emerged from the shadows in the wings. There was a troll with him, who, Buddy surmised, must have been Chrysoprase. He wasn't particularly big or even craggy. In fact, he had a smooth and glossy look to him, like a pebble found on a beach. There wasn't a trace of lichen anywhere. And he was wearing clothes. Clothes other than uniforms or special work clothes weren't normally a troll thing. Mostly, they were a loincloth to keep stuff in, and that was that. But Chrysoprase had a suit on. It looked badly tailored. It was, in fact, very well tailored, but even a troll with no clothes on looks fundamentally badly tailored. Chrysoprase had been a very quick learner when he arrived in Ankh-Morpork. He began with an important lesson. Hitting people was thuggery. Paying other people to do the hitting on your behalf was good business.
"I like you lads to meet Chrysoprase," said Dibbler. "An old friend of mine. Me and him go way back. That right, Chrys?"
"Indeed."
Chrysoprase gave Dibbler the warm, friendly smile a shark bestows on a haddock, with whom it suits it for now to swim in the same direction. A certain play of silicon muscles in the corners also suggested that one day certain people would regret. Chrys.
"Mr. Throat tells me yous boys is the best thing since slicing bread," he said. "Yous got everything yous need?"
They nodded mutely. People tended not to speak to Chrysoprase in case they said something that offended him. They wouldn't know it at the time, of course. They'd know it later, when they were in some dark alley and a voice behind them said, "Mr. Chrysoprase is really upset."
"Yous go and rest up in your dressing room," he went on. "Yous wants any food or drink, yous only got to say."
He'd got diamond rings on his fingers. Cliff couldn't stop staring at them. The dressing room was next to the privies and half full of beer barrels. Glod leaned on the door.
"I don't need the money," he said. "Just let me get out of here with my life. That's all I ask."
"You won't have to worry,"
Cliff began.
"You're trying to speak with your mouth shut, Cliff,"
said Buddy.
"I said, you don't have to worry. You got the wrong sort of teeth," said the troll.
There was a knock on the door. Cliff slammed his hand back over his mouth, but the knock turned out to belong to Ashfelt, who was carrying a tray. There were three types of beer. There were even smoked rat sandwiches with the crusts and tails cut off. and there was a bowl of finest anthracite coke with ash on it.
"Crunch it up good," moaned Glod, as Cliff took his bowl. "It may be the last chance you get."
"Maybe no one'll turn up and we can go home," said Cliff.
Buddy ran his fingers over the strings. The others stopped eating as the cords filled up the room.
"Magic," said Cliff, shaking his head.
"Don't you boys worry," said Ashfelt. "If there are any problems, it's the other guys who get it in the teeth."
Buddy stopped playing.
"What other guys?"
"Funny thing," said the little troll. "Suddenly everyone's playing music with rocks in it. Mr. Dibbler's signed up another band for the concert too, to kind of warm it up."
"Who?"
"It's called Insanity," said Ashfelt.
"Where are they?"
said Cliff.
"Well, put it like this. You know how your dressing room is next to the privy?"
Crash, behind the cavern's raggedy curtain, tried to tune his guitar. Several things got in the way of this simple procedure. Firstly, Blurt had realised what his customers really wanted, and praying forgiveness from his ancestors had spent more time gluing on bits of glittery stuff than he had on the actual functioning sections of the instrument. To put it another way, he'd knocked in a dozen nails and tied the strings to them. But this wasn't too much of a problem because Crash himself had the musical talent of a blocked nostril. He looked at Jimbo, Noddy and Scum. Jimbo, now the bass player, Blurt, giggling hysterically, had used a bigger lump of wood and some fence wire, was holding up his hand hesitantly.
"What is it, Jimbo?"
"One of my guitar strings is broke."
"Well, you got five more, ain't you?"
"Yeah, but I doesn't know how to play them, like."
"You didn't know how to play six, right? So now you're a bit less ignorant."
Scum peered around the curtain.
"Crash?"
"Yes?"
"There's hundreds of people out there, hundreds. A lot of them have got guitars, too, and they're sort of waving them in the air."
Insanity listened to the roar from the other side of the curtain. Crash did not have too many brain cells, and they often had to wave to attract one another's attention, but he had a tiny flicker of doubt that the sound that Insanity had achieved, while a good sound, was the sound that he'd heard last night in the drum. The sound made him want to scream and dance, while the other sound made him, well, made him want to scream and smash Scum's drum kit over its owner's head, quite frankly. Noddy took a peek between the curtains.
"Aye, there's a bunch of, they're wizards, right, in the front row," he said. "I'm pretty sure they're wizards, but, I mean..."
"You can tell, stupid," said Crash. "They've got pointy hats."
"Well, there's one with pointy hair," said Noddy.
The rest of Insanity applied eyes to the gap.
"Looks like a kind of unicorn spike made out of hair."
"What's he got on the back of his robe?" said Jimbo.
"It says, Born to Rune,"
said Crash, who was the fastest reader in the group and didn't need to use his finger at all.
"The skinny one's wearing a flared robe," said Noddy.
"He must be old. And they've all got guitars. Do you reckon they've come to see us?"
"Bound to have," said Noddy.
"That's a bodacious audience," said Jimbo.
"Yeah, that's right. Bodacious," said Scum. What's bodacious?"
I whispered.
"Dunno,"
said Glod. Buddy was staring at nothing with the guitar cradled in his arms. Occasionally he'd slap the casing very gently in time with whatever thoughts were sluicing through his head.
"He goes like that sometimes," said Cliff. "Just sits and looks at the air."
"Hey, they're shouting something out there," said Glod. "Listen."
The roar had a rhythm to it.
"Sounds like rocks roar
nerves?"
"No. Music should be free, free as the air and the sky."
Glod's head spun around. Buddy's voice had a faint suggestion of harmonics.
"Sure, right, that's what I said,"
said Dibbler.
"The guild..."
Buddy unfolded his legs and stood up.
"I expect people had to pay to get in here, didn't they?"
he said. Glod looked at the others. No one else seemed to have noticed and prepared to make the supreme sacrifice.
"I could... maybe go up, maybe a dollar,"
he said, each word fighting its way out of the strong room of his soul.
"If we go on stage now, I want us to do another performance," said Buddy.
Glod glared suspiciously at the guitar.
"Well, no problem. I can soon... Where's the profit in that?"
An empty beer bottle vibrated off the table and smashed on the floor. A troll appeared in the doorway, or at least part of it did. It wouldn't be able to get into the room without ripping the doorframe out, but it looked as though it would think twice about doing so.
"Mr. Chrysoprase says what's happening,"
it growled.
Dibbler began. "Mr. Chrysoprase don't like being kept waiting." "Oh, no, he gets sad if he's kept waiting." "All right,"
shouted Dibbler.
"Free, and that's cutting me own throat. You know that, don't you?"
Buddy played a chord. It seemed to leave little lights in the air.
"Let's go,"
he said softly.
"I know this city,"
Dibbler mumbled, as the band with Roxin hurried towards the vibrating stage.
"Tell people something's free and you'll get thousands of them turning up." "Needing to eat,"
said a voice in his head. It had a twang. "Needing to drink. Needing to buy band with Roxin shirts." Dibbler's face very slowly rearranged itself into a grin.
"A free festival," he said. "Right. It's our public duty. Music should be free. And sausages in a bun should be a dollar each. Mustard extra. Maybe $1.50. And that's cutting me own throat."
In the wings, the noise of the audience was a solid wall of sound.
"There's lots of them," said Glod. "I never played for that many in my entire life."
Ashfelt was arranging Cliff's rocks on the stage and getting massive applause and catcalls. Glod glanced up at Buddy. He hadn't let go of the guitar all this time. Dwarfs weren't given to deep introspection, but Glod was suddenly aware of a desire to be a long way from here, in a cave somewhere.
"Best of luck, you guys,"
said a flat little voice behind them. Jimbo was bandaging Crash's arm.
Thanks,
said Cliff.
"What happened to you?"
"They threw something at us,"
said Crash.
"What?"
"Noddy, I think."
What could be seen of Crash's face broke into a huge and terrible smile.
"We done it, though," he said. "We done music with Roxin, all right. That bit where Jimbo smashed his guitar, they loved that bit."
"Smashed his guitar?"
"Yeah,"
said Jimbo with the pride of the artist. "On scum." Buddy had his eyes closed. Cliff thought he could see a very, very faint glow surrounding him, like a thin mist. There were tiny points of light in it. Sometimes Buddy looked very elvish. Ashfelt scurried off the stage.
"Okay, all done,"
he said. The others looked at Buddy. He was still standing with his eyes shut, as if he was asleep on his feet.
"We'll get on out there, then,"
said Glod.
"Yeah,"
said Cliff.
"We'll get on out there, will we? Buddy?"
Buddy's eyes snapped open suddenly.
"Let's rock,"
he whispered. Cliff had thought that the sound was loud before, but it hit him like a club as they trooped out of the wings. Glod picked up his horn. Cliff sat down and found his hammers. Buddy walked to the centre of the stage, and to Cliff's amazement, just stood there looking down at his feet. The cheering began to subside, and then died away altogether. The huge hall was filled with the hush of hundreds of people holding their breath. Buddy's fingers moved. He picked out three simple little chords, and then he looked up.
"Hello, Ankh Morpork!"
Cliff felt the music rise up behind him and rush him forward into a tunnel of fire and sparks and excitement. He brought his hammers down, and it was music with Roxin. C.M.O.T. Dibbler stood out in the street so that he didn't have to hear the music. He was smoking a cigar and doing calculations on the back of an overdue bill for stale buns.
"Let's see. Okay, have it outside somewhere so there's no rent. Maybe 10,000 people, one sausage in a bun each at $1.50. Nah, say $1.75. Mustard 10 pence extra. 10,000 band with Roxin shirts at $5 each. Make that $10. Add stall rental for other traders, because people who like music with Roxin could probably be persuaded to buy anything."
He was aware of a horse coming along the street. He paid it no attention until a female voice said, "How do I get in here?"
"No chance. Tickets all sold out,"
said Dibbler, without turning his head. Even band with Roxin posters, people had been offering $3 just for posters, and Chalky the Troll could knock out 100 at... He looked up. The horse, a magnificent white one, watched him incuriously. Dibbler looked around.
"Where'd she go?"
There were a couple of trolls lounging just inside the entrance. Susan ignored them. They ignored her. In the audience, Ponder Stibbons looked both ways and cautiously opened a wooden box. The stretched string inside began to vibrate.
"This is all wrong,"
he shouted in Ridcully's ear.
"This is not according to the laws of sound."
Maybe they're not laws, screamed Ridcully. People a foot away couldn't hear him. Maybe they're just guidelines.
No, they have to be laws.
Ridcully saw the Dean try to climb on the stage in the excitement. Ashfalt's huge troll feet landed heavily on his fingers.
Oh, I say, good shot, said the Arch-Chancellor.
A prickling sensation on the back of his neck made him look around. Although the cavern was crowded, a space seemed to have formed in the floor. People were pressed together, but somehow this circle was inviolate as a wall. In the middle of it was the girl he'd seen in the drum. She was walking across the floor, holding her dress daintily. Ridcully's eyes watered. He stepped forward, concentrating. You could do almost anything if you concentrated. Anyone could have stepped into the circle if their senses had been prepared to let them know it was there. Inside the circle, the sound was slightly muted. He tapped her on the shoulder. She spun round, startled.
Good evening, said Ridcully.
He looked her up and down and then said,
I'm Mustram Ridcully, Arch-Chancellor of Unseen University. I can't help wondering who you are.
The girl looked panicky for a moment.
Well, technically, I suppose I'm Death.
Technically?
Yes, but not on duty at the moment.
Oh, very glad to hear that.
There was a shriek from the stage as Ashfelt threw the lecturer in recent rooms into the audience, which applauded.
Can't say I've seen that much of Death, said Ridcully, but in so far as I have, he's tended to be, well, he, to start with, and a good deal thinner.
He's my grandfather.
Really? I didn't even know he was,
Ridcully stopped.
Well, fancy that. Your grandfather. And you're in the family firm?
Shut up, you stupid man, said Susan. Don't you dare patronize me. You see him? She pointed to the stage where Buddy was in mid-riff. He's going to die soon because of silliness, and if you can't do anything about it, go away. Ridcully glanced at the stage. When he looked back, Susan had vanished. He made a mighty effort and thought he caught a glimpse of her a little way off, but she knew he was looking for her, and he had no chance of finding her now. Ashfelt got back into the dressing room first. There is something very sad about an empty dressing room. It's like a discarded pair of underpants, which it resembles in a number of respects. It had seen a lot of activity. It may even have witnessed excitement and a whole gamut of human passions. And now there's nothing much left but a faint smell. The little troll dumped the bag of rocks on the floor and bit the top off a couple of beer bottles. Cliff entered. He got halfway across the floor and then fell over, hitting the boards with every part of his body at once. Glod stepped over him and flopped onto a barrel. He looked at the beer bottles. He took off his helmet. He poured the beer into the helmet, then he let his head flop forward. Buddy entered and sat down in the corner, leaning against the wall, and Dibbler followed.
Well, what can I say? What can I say?
He said.
Don't ask us, said Cliff, from his prone position. How should we know?
That was magnificent, said Dibbler. What's up with the dwarf? Is he drowning?
Glod reached out an arm, without looking, smashed the top of another bottle of beer and poured it over his head.
Mr. Dibbler, said Cliff.
Yes. I think we want to talk. Just us, like, the band, if you don't mind.
Dibbler looked from one to the other. Buddy was staring at the wall. Glod was making bubbling noises. Cliff was still on the floor.
Okay, he said, and then added brightly, Buddy, the free performance? Great idea. I'll start organising it right away, and you can do it just as soon as you get back from your tour. Right. Well, I'll just...
He turned to leave and walked into Cliff's arm, which was suddenly blocking the doorway.